This is a Weird News Roundup presented by Odyssey's Something Offbeat podcast. Every week, we dive into strange stories reported on by Odyssey's radio newsrooms from coast to coast. In this episode, we're catching up with a couple who climbed to the top of the Empire State Building for a stunt last week. Then we're headed to Rocket City, USA to see a very special rocket. From there, we're headed to the video game aisle, where things could start looking, well, a little scary for gamers. That's because equipment they love might soon be disappearing. An expert will help explain why, and he'll help explain why we can blame it on AI. After we check out the video games, we're also stopping by the toy aisle to get a stern warning about the viral, squishy, sensory toys that are sending kids to the hospital. We'll start things off with a breakdown of that moment atop the Empire State Building that made headlines last Wednesday. Mac Rosenberg of Odyssey Station 1010 Winds in New York City joined WWJ News Radio's Kyle Kimball in Detroit to provide a rundown of what happened.
Mac, what was it like?
Well, I got there toward the tail end of this, so there were hundreds of people surrounding the Empire State Building. You had multiple blocks that were blocked off by police. But I mean, this is Midtown Manhattan. So this is like one of the busiest areas of New York City. You've got tourists. You've got obviously so many people that are in the city already for the World Cup. Everybody working at the Empire State Building as well. So, and all the people that were hanging out at the observation deck, all the tourists up there, when they spotted, some of them did actually see the two people up there. And we obviously got a view from many of the news helicopters, but they were just about wrapping it up, and the couple was actually taken out in a police van, and everybody was holding up their phones to try to get a view.
As best we know, this is Russian daredevils Angela Nikolaou and Ivan Birkus. Is that correct?
That's what's being reported. We have not actually yet heard officially from police that it is these two, but it's being widely reported that it is these two daredevils, and they, let's just say they've done things like this before. There are actually several posts on social media from their accounts showing video of them, you know, from their accounts up at the top of the Empire State Building. So it does appear that it's them. These guys were the stars of a documentary a couple of years ago called Skywalkers, A Love Story. So, you know, this is something that I'm going to take a wild guess was planned by them. You know, we got what looks like a marriage proposal, too.
I was going to ask, Mac, was there a romantic component to all of this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're saying love is in the air today, Kyle. It's, you know, quite literally 1,454 feet in the air. So what they did first was they literally got as high as you could possibly get at the tippy top of the spire, which is, I believe, 100 or so feet above the actual base that, you know, of the building. So there's this spire that shoots back up into the air. So they were up there. You really can't stand up there. There's like just no way where to really stand. They had there was a protest element first. They had a banner that they unfurled that read, "When the power of love beats the love of power, the world knows peace." And that's something that Jimi Hendrix said several decades ago. So they did that first. Then they came down onto the platform at the base of the spire, and they were hanging out. I mean, they had a selfie stick, what looked like a selfie stick out there that they had planted down, and then you had this proposal. They shared some hugs and kisses. There was a picture that Angela Nikolaou, purportedly Angela Nikolaou, took a picture with her hand up in front of the camera, a ring on her finger, and the lower Manhattan skyline behind it. So again, a lot of evidence that it was these two, because again, there's pictures on their social medias and videos of the view that they had.
Mac, how does the district attorney usually charge things like this?
You know, that is the big question right now. We have not heard anything about charges, so I don't want to, you know, speculate, Kyle, but, you know, they were arrested, obviously. They've been at the precinct now for several hours, so we haven't heard anything about charges, but I believe that there would be, you know, based on precedent, there might be, it could be a felony situation, but again, I don't want to speculate at this time.
Yeah, in the past, we don't have a good roadmap for how these things are charged. And of course, the district attorney changes. We're not able necessarily to rely on precedent.
Right. I mean, there have been a few times where this happened in the past, as I was telling you before. But it's not clear exactly what the next steps legally would be here.
To reach great heights, some people decide to scale skyscrapers. Others become astronauts and are propelled into space with the help of rockets. Without these rockets, there would never have been that one small step for man and one giant leap for mankind. The history of these rockets can be traced back further than the space race. Kelly and Bob Phillips of Own the Road with Kelly and Bob out of Odyssey Station KRLD 1080 in Dallas recently made a trip to learn more about this rocket in the aptly nicknamed Rocket City. Here's a little snippet of their adventure.
Long before NASA and our efforts to go to the moon, we were developing and testing rockets as part of our military programs. And that's when our destination city this week began to come into play.
We're headed to Rocket City, USA, otherwise known as Huntsville, Alabama.
I was born in Miami, Florida, and grew up there until I was about 9 years old. Then we moved up to North Alabama, community about an hour and a half or so from Huntsville. As I grew up, my grandfather on my dad's side was a big Star Trek fan. And so I grew up watching reruns of Star Trek with him. And then Star Wars came out. I started watching Star Wars. So I've always been a science fiction person. And I was always fascinated on the news, the stories about the shuttle launches. First, I was born before the shuttle program started at the end of the Skylab program. And so I recall just a little bit on the news about Skylab and everything. So I've always loved space science, whether it was the real space science or the science fiction kind.
Ed Stewart says it was reruns of the 1960s TV show Star Trek that first got him hooked on all things having to do with space science.
Then the Star Wars movies came along, and that pretty much sealed the deal. Ed would be going to space.
So it's always been a part of my growing up and a part of my person since I was a little kid. And I have a little bit of a hiccup as I was getting older. I learned that I had asthma, which qualified me out to fly any kind of aircraft for the military or to be a pilot for the space shuttle program. I was kind of bummed by that and kind of took a different direction because I did music and theater and stuff for a while as well. But then kind of eventually came back around when I got an opportunity to come to work at space camp one summer in 2001. And I was going to be here for the summer and then move along. And I've been here ever since.
For every astronaut, there are thousands of people working behind the scenes to send rockets into space. So even though he knew he couldn't be the one to fly those space buggies, Ed Stewart was still excited to work on rockets.
And that's how he ended up here in Huntsville, Alabama, Rocket City, USA.
Huntsville, out of a whole random set of combinations of circumstances, ended up becoming the center for the Army's missile defense and research program. And so along with that came rockets, rocket engineers, paperclip scientists out of World War II. After spending some time in the U.S. Southwest in White Sands and in El Paso area, they ended up here. And out of that grew NASA's research and development program for propulsion and the rockets themselves. So capsules and satellites and stuff was typically other NASA centers, but once NASA became an official program in 1958, it sort of spun out of the Army's missile program and the Air Force's missile program, plus the aviation program that existed. And all of that kind of ended up happening here. Construction started in 68, kind of wrapped up in 69, and in 1970, we opened our doors. That grew over time, and eventually in 1982, we opened up the space camp programs, which has helped us grow even more. And now we're a huge campus with multiple buildings and huge artifacts indoors and outdoors.
And of all the artifacts you'll see here at the Space Rocket Center, nothing comes close to the size of the giant Saturn V rocket.
It's the kind of thing you would expect to see in the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum in the nation's capital. But it's here in Huntsville.
So the Saturn V is a giant three-stage rocket that launched Americans to the moon in the 1960s. And the early 1970s, it put our first space station into orbit around the Earth. And it was designed and developed here in Huntsville. We had a test firing of the large engines on the first stage that broke windows in downtown Huntsville from miles away, set off seismographs in Birmingham and in northern Florida.
When we get back from our break, we're coming back down to Earth to inspect some frightening news about fun. That's up next on this Weird News Roundup from Odyssey's Something Offbeat podcast. Thank you for listening to this special presentation of Weird News from Odyssey's Something Offbeat. Over the years, video games have evolved from the simple joys of Pong to arcade specialties like Galaga, and then to elaborate, immersive experiences on Xbox and PlayStation. Now they're changing again, and not necessarily in exciting or awe-inspiring ways. Artificial intelligence is actually partially to blame for this. That's what ABC tech reporter Mike DeBusky explained in a recent interview with Odyssey station WBEN News and Talk in Buffalo.
Is Xbox going away, Mike?
No, not at this point, but they are announcing some pretty significant layoffs. According to Microsoft, they're laying off about 4,800 people starting this week. 1,600 of them are in the Xbox division. And what's more, over the next fiscal year, they're going to be laying off 1,600 more Xbox employees, for a total about 3,200 employees that are going to be let go. That comes in addition to the company announcing that they're going to spin off some of their game studios, the basically divisions of Microsoft that build some of their proprietary games. Some of those studios are going to go back to being independent outfits. Some of them are going to go back to their original owners. However, they do say that the games that are on the schedule that gamers might be anticipating are still going to come out on time. Overall, these cuts amount to a little over 2% of Microsoft and about 20% of the Xbox team. And guys, this matters to a lot of people. A lot of people play video games. Over 190 million Americans play video games. 78% of U.S. households have at least one gaming device in them. At least they did in the last 12 months or so. So this impacts a huge swath of people. And what's more, it's also a really big economic driver. In 2023, the U.S. video game industry supported about 350,000 jobs and contributed nearly $66 billion to the U.S. GDP.
Wow. So what do all these cuts then mean for the gaming industry?
Well, in the short term, it means that things are getting more expensive and they're likely to continue to do so. So with fewer people on board, that's going to stretch teams even thinner. And that's going to lead to, you know, more costs going up for the consumer, right? It comes as Xbox says that prices for its game consoles are going up by as much as $150 in some cases. PlayStation also announcing similar price increases over the last several months. Nintendo also raising prices on the Switch 2, which is a super popular console for them. So this is really impacting more than just Xbox. This cuts across the entire gaming industry. And it all goes back to this memory shortage. I sound like a broken record often, but this ongoing shortage in computer memory that is out there is driving up these costs and leading to a lot of these cuts at these companies because they're just stretched so thin. The short version of this story is that AI companies like OpenAI and Anthropic and Google and Microsoft themselves are buying up computer memory in order to run and build the AI models that are out there. Things like ChatGPT and, in Microsoft's case, Copilot, they require really powerful computers. That means RAM, random access memory, that means memory. So that leaves less memory for the rest of the consumer tech space. Last week, we talked about how Apple is raising prices, Xbox also raising prices. Interestingly enough, if you go back about a year, the gaming industry was kind of the canary in the coal mine here. Gamers like to build their own gaming PCs, and they said, well, hey, I need memory in order to do that. They said, hey, this is starting to get kind of expensive if you paid attention to certain forums around that time. Now it's starting to impact the kind of more mainstream outfits like Xbox, PlayStation, and others.
Hmm.
Not the only big gaming news over the last week or so since we last talked to you, Mike. What PlayStation was announcing that they're doing away with the actual physical disc that you put into the machine. And I immediately thought of, well, what does this do for all those used game stores that you see all around here? Are they going to be able to do, well, anything at all in the near future? What do you make of this?
Yeah, so PlayStation announcing that they are going to be phasing out the physical disc collection. That's going to happen within the next year and a half or so. So starting in 2028, when you go to buy a PlayStation game, it's going to be a digital code, right? And we've already started to see the gaming industry really move in this direction. In fact, 95% of video games were purchased digitally last year, while 5% were physical purchases. Now, that does make sense in some contexts, right? A lot of the gaming industry is like the mobile gaming industry, things like Clash of Clans or, you know, the Angry Birds, that type of thing, the stuff that you download onto your phone. There's no physical version of that, really. But when we talk about, like, physical discs in the console space, well, that's a more important, kind of more existential threat to some gamers, right? They're concerned that, hey, what happens if I'm playing a game that might not be especially popular or is maybe a little old or outdated, but I still like it? Well, now PlayStation can basically just pull the plug whenever they want to. They can phase out a digital store where that game exists. And, you know, it doesn't matter if you saved your progress or not, that thing's gone. Whereas in the old world, you had a physical disc that you could basically just play until you ran it into the ground. So this is a concern for gamers who are just hobbyists. It's also a concern for preservationists who are out there. In fact, the Video Game History Foundation has kind of dedicated itself to, like, preserving this art form, which admittedly is newer than, you know, movies or music or what have you, but it's still, you know, just as lucrative and just as paid attention to as those art forms. They say that about 87% of the games made before 2010 are basically unplayable at this point. There is a real preservation crisis, and you can imagine that now this extra uncertainty in the sort of gaming space motivated by this PlayStation decision is only going to exacerbate that.
That news might make some people listening reach for their favorite fidget toy, either because they're stressed or because those toys are easier on the budget and they'll have to get used to them now that video games are getting more expensive. However, those toys aren't risk-free. While much of the country has been dealing with severe heat this summer, those popular squishy fidget toys have been exploding, yes, exploding, in the extreme temperatures, even sending some kids to the hospital and leaving a dangerous, sticky substance in their wake. Dana Wright and Sam Stevie III of the Dana and Parks Show out of Odyssey Station KMBZ in Kansas City discussed this dangerous new development this week.
It's important to me that we help get the word out to any parent or any kid who has gone to the store to purchase a massively popular toy that is now hospitalizing children with severe, excruciating third-degree burns, and worse.
In some cases so bad, they're in a medically induced coma.
It is awful. One of the victims is in Missouri. A 7-year-old girl. Beautiful little girl. So around the world, these brightly colored squishy toys, marketed as harmless sensory gadgets, are hurting kids. They are designed to be squeezed, stretched, and smooshed. They are hugely popular. I want you to look up the teenager who had this thing explode in her dad's car, because it was caught on surveillance tape. Behind the viral appeal of these Nedo toys, N-E-E-D-O-H, doctors say a dangerous pattern is emerging, one that is sending children and teenagers to the hospital with severe burns amid blood-curdling screams of pain. It has required everything from skin grafts to medically induced comas for treatment. And all it takes for this to occur is for the toys to be frozen, heated, or microwaved. There have been teenagers, as part of some viral social media thing, that have tried to put this gooey thing in the microwave. Don't do that. What terrifies me is that in the case of this 7-year-old, I believe, and certainly in the teenager, it was just in the car. It's July. Into the store with your mom or dad. This Nedo squish ball is in the car. They come back to the car. All she did, the teenager, was pick up the ball when she got in the car. unbeknownst to her, that liquid goo, when it is left in the heat, it boils. It expands and it boils, and then it explodes. And when that goo ends up on a child's skin, it is a disastrous outcome. They contain a natural sugar-based filling that expands rapidly when it gets hot, increasing the internal pressure, and in some cases, it explodes. Now, the manufacturer does say there's a warning on the toy that says, do not heat, freeze, or microwave. How many kids leave their toys in the car?
Oh, I mean, you take a kid to the store, they bring a couple toys with them to keep them occupied while you're driving, often encouraged by the parents, you know, so they're not just iPad kids. And what do you do when you get to the store? You leave the toy in the car. And it only takes a few minutes in 90, 100 degree weather to get that car to 140 degrees.
They have seen internal damage. Quoting here from Dr. Michael Cooper, director of the burn unit at Northwell Staten Island University Hospital. Children are especially vulnerable because their skin is thinner, more delicate. In a split second, we are seeing significant tissue damage.
So please be careful with your toys in the heat. And thank you so much for listening to this Weird News Roundup presented by Odyssey's Something Offbeat podcast. This episode was written and produced by me, Lauren Berry. Special thanks to WWJ News Radio in Detroit, On the Road with Kelly and Bob out of KRLD 1080 in Dallas, WBEN News and Talk in Buffalo, and the Dana and Parks Show out of KMBZ in Kansas City. You can find all of these programs, including the Something Offbeat podcast, on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.